Okay, this is the 24th of May, 1984, and this tape is part of the Yukon Koyukuk Biographical Sketch Project. This is tape 4 with Edgar Nolner. We're talking in Edgar's living room in Galena, and I'm Wendy Arendale. This morning, Edgar, you showed me a clipping from the paper about a man you rescued, or a couple of men that you rescued from an air crash. Can you tell us about that?
What is that?
No, I forgot the date. The date is on the paper, too.
Well, this paper is dated January 1979, and the article says nearly 26 years ago, so it would be 26 years before 1979. That would be
53. 1953? I think so, 53, I think. Yeah. I've got the date, I forgot all about it.
Yeah.
26 years ago. It tells on there where he came out. You read it, yeah.
You want to describe what happened?
Oh, just a little bit. I know a little bit now. I've got most of it. Now, it was, I forgot how many blow. It was cold at 50 something, and I went up the road and I was started to cut wood up here. And I took three dogs and went up there and I was cutting wood, and pretty soon I hear that jet taking off down there. And then pretty soon it took off, and pretty soon the motor stopped. And then just like it was whistling when it was coming down. And Donaldson was on that side, lake over there. He was cutting wood too, but he had lots of Parkinson, and he didn't hear that plane crash because he knocked a tree down the same time. I heard it crash back here, so I run out to the lake looking for smoke or nothing. So I run back to my dogs and I left my axe and things there, and I started down the road. I was running down, and then pretty soon I met a fire truck and a weapons carrier. And he asked me, I told him it's down that way. I was coming down the road this way, and I told him it's down that way. No, they said they're going to look up here where I came from. I let them go. I keep running with the sea dogs, and pretty soon I met another truck right out there, Alexander Lake. And he asked this, I stopped them. I told him it's back this way. And then two GIs, no gloves. But I had extra gloves in the sleigh. And I had the three dogs, and they jump on the sleigh. And I was running with them all the way back, and I get off, I look over this way, nothing. So I came down, and then I went back that way. And Donaldson picked them up, and then Donaldson was coming with, I told him, plane crash back here, holler to him. And he picked these two GIs up, and they were going back, and I went that way. And then I came out, they're going around the bend back here, at this stick. And I see where all them trees broke. And then they just kept going. Even them branches on the snow, them tree guys couldn't even figure that out. You could tell. They went to the end and over into the other slough. And I stopped there and I look up there and I see it back there, so I thought they were killed. I ran back to my dogs and I went over in the slough, and they were just going in the slough up there. I had 22 in the sleigh. I shot a couple of times and they stopped. They look. I went like this. I point back that way. Then I turned around. And then when I got there, I went back there and these were all over that view. And then I see them way over there. They get out and they go, so they try to make fire. No gloves, one got big cut around here on the face, and blood all over them. And they tried to make a fire away from them, jet fuel, you know, mm-hmm. cut away. And we couldn't make it. And I had diesel in the sled, and I run down there, and I got this, and I made fire for them. They tried to go on the fire, they were pretty near froze already. Mm-hmm. By that time, Donaldson and them came, them two GIs, and I gave it close to them two GIs, because they didn't have no gloves to when they left the truck out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we fire, and then I start down the road, them three dogs. And then I met another truck coming up. And I told them, they drove all the way up to there, but no axe, they couldn't bring them guys out. But soon Raymond and I forgot who was a dog team, they came there, and everybody was coming through the woods,
mm-hmm.
through the streets. And GIs and Charlie Evans, all of them. Way after we had fire going, we were there with them. And the truck, I went back. I left my dogs down the road on the side, and we came up. I came up with them. I told them right to the end. And there was no axe. Bruce and Raymond them came, and they unslapped the sleigh. And he packed the sleigh back and put them guys, one guy at a time, on the sleigh, and mm-hmm. then packed them out. Couldn't make trail. Nobody had an axe or nothing.
Mm.
Uh-huh. And Tick Willis, too. Now, when I got there, this one guy said, one guy was all right, but the other guy, one had broken back, and I think this guy here,
mm-hmm.
and his face, you know, nothing. This other guy said, I can walk out to my sleigh, but I had only a small sleigh, and three dogs, that's all. And I told him, wait. Before I went down, and till the guys came and they packed them out, and finally they got them on the truck, and their hands was, their feet was, you know, froze to cold. It was cold.
Mm.
Mirabella, the teacher, they came too, and then they had big coat, and they pulled off their boots, and then they put the GIs put under the coat and keep mm-hmm. their feet warm,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and then they took them down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then would you tell about the part where one of the guys came back?
Oh yeah, it was 26 years after. Is it 26 years after when they came back? Now we seen them walking by in front of our place.
Uh-huh.
Him and his wife, but we didn't know who they were, and they were looking for me. Not for me, but they didn't know who it was.
Uh-huh.
Didn't know it was me.
They didn't know your name.
Uh-huh. They didn't know. And then when he went by, he looked at me, but he went by. And soon he went back. We're going to go back to fish camp pretty soon. Rosie, the grandchild, Yeager, they were ready to leave back to the airport. They were telling about, they were looking for a guy that rescued them. I mean, and then, he said, my grandpa might know. He said, he's out of the village. Then she brought them out to our place. And then he come in and he asked me, I said, yeah, I made fire for you guys. And then he said, no wonder, I thought I recognized you, but I wasn't sure. He said,
uh-huh. That's a long time.
Yeah, 26 years. And then they were here, him and his wife. They were just going to get on the plane too. They had only a few hours left when they found out
uh-huh.
it was me. And they were there 2 days. They couldn't find out who it was. And after that, we had some pictures that they took in the house,
mm-hmm.
you and I. And after that, he came a few years ago, 3-4 years ago, I guess, about 3 years maybe.
Mm-hmm.
He came back here again. He asked me, I know how many times you want to take me out of California. He got some kind of business now,
mm-hmm.
electronic something,
mm-hmm.
some kind of business.
Mm-hmm.
He said he got, I don't know how many guys working for him out there. So he wanted to take me out there, but I said, no, no. I gave him a ride back this way and out on the Yukon, take pictures. He take pictures when I sit on the snow go, and I took his picture when he's on the snow go. And yeah, he wanted to take me out too. And I didn't go. He said the other, the pilot was around California. He said he'd seen him after that. Yeah. He told him he'd seen me, who made the fire. Yeah.
I always think that people who remember others who do those kinds of things are really special. You know, they have something about them and that they recognize the value of what someone else has done for them, and they want to kind of show that person that they do recognize, you know, the value of what the person did for them.
Yeah. He said he'd be back again sometime, and he'd come see me again.
Yeah.
Charlie, he got Charlie in there too. Charlie would, way after we made fire, way after that, they keep coming. Who was coming this way and straight across through the woods. Some GIs too, and some this way. Yeah, they just keep all coming. Yeah.
Were there ever any other plane crashes around here?
Oh, this few. The time that we made a forced landing over there, that two motor plane. We are there on the flat, they're all nigger heads, deep snow that time. And they had the wheels up, because it started landing, but they were too far in them already down, so they didn't want, they had to take off again. And when they were going around, we watched it going around way on the other side, but soon it went down. And I started to go across. Fred Stickman had dog team, and I went across with him. We got over in the snow, and then he wanted to go back the tower so he can listen for tour. And I had snowshoes. And the station manager, they had a weasel and the trailer behind, and they went in the snow already ahead of me. And the Pan American plane was coming down, and they came down, and they talked with this plane on the ground that with forced landing, and then you go around, and pretty soon they were coming out of the slough. You see that weasel track up the slough, but can't go up the bank, no place, it's too steep. And then they were coming, and just a mile of Jack's slough, I was walking up, and pretty soon they were coming down, they got light right on me, and they said, there's one guy coming up in snowshoes. And then I got on top of the bank, and I walked through the woods all the way back, and then I hear that weasel back there. He couldn't, and then went down there and went over there, and the snow was too deep. And then two pilots, there was one Eskimo woman and one girl about this big, and there was only four of them. And I went back there. They had some extra snowshoes in that weasel down there. So I had to go back, and then I packed two pair of snowshoes back to them, pilots. They had shoes on, up this long, no socks, full of snow, and it was warm though.
Oh, good.
And then they put them with snowshoes on, they walked just like skiing. And then the Eskimo woman, I picked her feet on the snowshoes, but she don't know how to walk in snowshoes too, but she just like walking skiing. And this one, a CA guy was with me. He packed that girl all the way out. It was this much snow, deep snow that time. And when we went by the trail, we were towards Hazel's cabin. That plane was just right on that Hazel's trail. That, but we went all the way around that. We didn't know it was further up. We didn't know where it went down anyway.
Yeah.
And then Christopher, he was over there after that, they took picture. He was standing on top of the wings. After that, Clarence Cesar, he went over D8, and then he threw all the nigger heads off. They made a runway from, and they dejected up and then put them wheels down and then changed a couple of props on there.
Uh-huh.
And then it took off from there and came back over.
So they got it,
did,
out?
Oh, it didn't do nothing. Just bent the props, that's all.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't hurt the plane because it was deep snow.
Well, that's
good. All open too. Uh-huh. Just right.
Yeah.
And when the plane stopped, it was right on the trail too. And then Fraser made a runway for it. And it looked like a lake right now over there where
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where they bulldozed the permafrost.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All the niggerheads, they just stripped it all off. Yeah. A good runway too.
What kind of plane was that?
It's a two motor plane, big, pretty good size, big one. I don't know, it's not 47.
Mm. And what year did that happen?
I wouldn't know what year. I never keep track of what year it happened.
It was before snow machines came in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were you and Bessie together when that happened, or was that before you and Bessie got together?
I think before. Before.
Uh-huh. So that means it's probably before about 1950. Sometime before about...
Before 1950, yeah. Mm-hmm. One time there was a plane...
Yeah.
Because Christopher was standing on top of the plane.
How do you remember about how old he would have been then?
Who?
Christopher.
No. Oh, he was pretty tall.
Uh-huh. He was a teenager, maybe?
Uh-huh, yeah.
We were talking a little bit last night about the, I think you said he was a Frenchman who found gold up around, Bear Creek or something? Have I got that right?
Well, you mean that guy that didn't come back?
Yeah.
Oh,
can you
tell
that story? That's a good
one. I forgot his, I think his name was Bruce. Was at Loudon the time before we moved down here. And he went back that way. You know, after that he came out, he found gold again. And then but he didn't say where it was, and he went back to the old country. He was going to make a trip out there and come back. But he went out there and he never came back. He died over there someplace. And we used to look for it, but we couldn't find it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who used to look for it?
No.
Who besides you?
Oh, there was my brother Walter and Lincoln Stockman and Charlie Evans and a bunch of school, we used to go back. Lots of guys used to go back in there, but they couldn't find it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me you said something last night about finding a...
Windlass,
yeah.
Yeah, that's what we seen that place, yeah. But it might have been different guys around there, yeah. Though. Because used to be lots of guys used to go up Bear Creek, too.
Uh-huh.
Used to be cabin here and then cabin there, just like you could same way, too.
Uh-huh.
They used to all go out look for gold, you know. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever stake, or did anybody ever stake over in that area?
No, we didn't stake. We were going to stake, but we didn't think it was the right place, so we started to stake, but we gave up.
Uh-huh. Have you ever staked a claim anywhere?
No.
Never got gold fever, huh?
No. No. It was around $16 an ounce sometimes, Now it's over 300 and something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Real big change in the price of gold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I was listening to that videotape today, there was something in it about you going to Ruby about 1911 or 1912. I didn't understand that part. Was that just a trip to visit Ruby, or did you live in Ruby for a while?
Who?
You.
No. I think they strike gold in 1911, I guess. But I never went up to there till about 1916, I guess.
Uh-huh.
They had dog race. I went up with Auntie Pauline and Stockman.
Uh-huh.
That was not too big that time.
Uh-huh. When you say Stockman, did Stockman have a first name or is that his first name?
Arthur J. Stockman.
Arthur J. Stockman.
Uh-huh. He was married to my auntie, my mother's sister.
Uh-huh. So he was Pauline's husband?
Hmm?
He was Pauline's husband?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He used to have a store in Caltech, Nulato and Galena and Ruby. He used to be operator around here long ago, telegraph operator long ago. And before we moved to Loudoun, I think. I was pretty small that time.
So he was at least a good maybe 10 years older than you were?
Who?
Stockman. How much older than you was he?
Well, he was a signal corpsman already when I was born. Mm-hmm.
So he was more like 20 years older than you were anyway.
More than that, I think, yeah.
We talked about various kinds of hunting and trapping, but we haven't talked much about goose hunting or duck hunting. Did you ever do much of that kind of hunting?
Well, we used to hunt ducks and geese every spring.
Uh-huh.
From here we used to go up loud or down below, hunt down below. That's where my brother got drowned down in George, between the islands, hunting. I was down Kaikook that time, and then they telephoned down their telegraph line that time, and they said George got drowned on May 8th. I think the 31, I think.
Hmm. What happened? You know?
He started across the river, and at that, they went across there, they came across, and not too long after they started to go across, and that ice got too soft, and then went under.
Mm.
He had three dogs, that's all. And he was on the back of the sleigh went down with him, and it swept around there, and he went under. And them two dogs got drowned, but the leader was on the ice for I don't know how long. And then Jimmy came up and then told them, guys, he went down and he got Henry go out, a small guy, put a long rope on him, and he walked out there and pulled on them and found them, pulled them two dead dogs out in the sleigh, but the brother was gone, went under. We never found him. We never did find him.
That's terrible. Well, while we're talking about geese hunting, maybe you could describe how you hunt geese.
Well, we just got dogs and then go up around Loudoun or down below, any place.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of us used to go together. Geese everywhere them days anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Coming on, them geese used to be coming and going steady. And now how many days? Everywhere you look, there's geese flying.
Mm-hmm.
No more now, just few.
Did you build a blind to hunt?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did you make that out of?
Willows. Willows? Grass. Winter.
Did you call geese?
I used to call geese right down. I used to call geese pretty good. They always tease me about that now. One time around 1931, I guess, I was playing volleyball in front of the school down. The little school was up in the village down there. And we had a volleyball net up, and four on each side. And right after break up, there was goose coming up. I call him, and he come right down. And we all went down, and didn't look for a rock or stick, nothing. And went down like this, and we had only ice sheet on, and right here, I jump up and I went like this, but I said I hit him on the head, went down in the water, put his head in the water. Earl Hoshi shot at it with a rifle, and he missed it. I told him, guys, if it was lower, I would have caught it, but I couldn't catch it, a little too high, but this high, not even this high. And they used to call him Red Dawn. In time of the plantation on CA boats, there's about, must be about 80 geese going in the willows.
Uh-huh.
Young was sticking the fly last time. When he got in front there, I started to call the geese. They all came out. And then they would stay right behind the big boat. Some on the beach, some on the water, come behind us. The whole thing, when I call them, and then when I quit, they all go around like this. And then we call them again, the whole thing moved. About three bends, my throat started to get sore, and I quit, and they all go around, and we went around the bend. Charlie took pictures of it, but it was a little too dark. It didn't come out
quick. Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, old Rand and Merle, they used to laugh about that. He looked funny, the whole thing.
Would you be willing to put on the tape a goose call?
I can't call them no more.
Oh.
But this spring I couldn't call geese, but and then one time I went behind the station up there and in the big lake. The party was up there, he got some geese, and next day we went up, and there in RC, three of us, we got some geese, and next day we started to go up, and Danny Patrick says, I want to go. We tell him, go ahead. Then he beat his power wagon, and we got to the lake, and we came out the lake, and there said, me and Danny going to stay in that blind out there. I said, go ahead. And then Archie and I made one this side. Archie was about this big that time.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't have no shotgun. Only Larry, so they were sitting out there, and there was two geese coming up, and Danny Patrick had a goose caller. He was calling them geese, and the geese were just going like this. They're out there, not too far from me, and to this side. And then when he passed, Danny calling them geese nothing. So we're saying, what? Them geese, they just turn like this. And then Larry knocked one down, and he couldn't hit the other one because the blind too small. I see the shotgun going like this. The other one got away. I hollered at Danny. I said, Danny, how much that thing cost? He said, $5. I said, I told him, throw it away. And I see last time we called geese with him, but I don't know. It's them geese, they just keep going.
Maybe it's for outside geese. Maybe does it work for Alaskan geese?
No, I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, let's take a little break for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, did you have something else? I don't want to stop you.
No, one time I was down the little one spring, 49. Used to go cross spring geese over. Every time I call geese, they just come right down to me and knock geese down. And the torch, one time, Heine Summers. I met Heine. I was on the other side of the island, and there's a trail about this wide, long willows. And I met him, and we talked, and I went little ways, and he got to the edge, and geese come over. He shot 5 times, pump gun, nothing. And then when they were going over me, I had the old automatic. I just went like this. I never put gun on my shoulder when I shoot. I just like this. When they were going through, I shot 3 times. I knocked 3 down. And he looked at me, shook his head, walked away. And last time I went across, I got 26 ducks and Romeo. And every time I shoot geese, ducks come. I shoot 2 times, ducks, 2 ducks. I run and pick them up. He had a good place. There was a pond, and he had a blind there. But he asked me, Maxie and Simeon and Baby John, they were down the other place. He asked me, where are you going to stay? I said, down here. Down the point like this on the other side. Willis this side. He said, no water. I said, I don't need water. I told him, I might knock these ducks down. I was there a little while, I got 26 ducks. He loaned me a pack sack. And I left. I was over there about 24 hours. And next morning they came back, and they come over to the store, and he said, you know, we came home 4 o'clock this morning. He said, you know how many ducks I got after you look? I said, no. He said, 2 more. 10 ducks. You know how many times I shot? He said, no. 36 times. He went like this, and his shoulder was all blue right here.
Oh, no.
And he's telling about that. Right after breakup, there were little eyes on the river. And I hear a couple of shots, two, three shots up in front of summer store. And big wood pile there. And I hear running out with a canoe. And he went out and picked a couple, two or three ducks, pintails up. And then he gave it to them kids. And then I walk up to him. And we went in summer store. And old Summers was sitting behind the counter, and when we came in, Romeo said, "I want a box of shells." Now he reached under the counter, he put it on the counter, and big window here, the door is right there. I was down there soon. I said, "Geese coming, five geese, not too high, just right. Five geese coming, right for the store." I told him, "Geese coming." He grabbed them shells and he had shotgun in the ports, and then he loaded up. And Heinick Summers came out behind the between the building with his pump gun too. Two of them were shot 10 times, nothing dropped. Old Summers standing behind me, and Romeo in front, Heinick over there. Them geese went back that way. They were going out. The Nakalam, they came right back same way, and they load up again. He shot 10 more times, nothing dropped. And old Summers, he's a German. He said, "Yes," he said. "After they shoot at him, you call him, they came right back." I said, "Good shooting." "Ooh," he went in the store. 20 shots, not even one. And I didn't, they went back, they went, I didn't call him no more. Because they were wasting ammunition. And next day I see Summers. I said, "Tell him, good shooting yesterday." "Oh," he said, "pin your box of shells." I always tease Romeo about that. See, I told him, if I had my old automatic, I would knock all of them down. He said, "How the heck didn't I give you a shotgun?"
When you eat these, what's your favorite way to cook them?
Oh, boy. Bake them or cook boil them. Me and Thomas went down below here. There's a, on the end of the aisle, there's a pond there. We hear geese in there, so I told him I'll go around below and you chase them to me. They'll take off towards me at home. And I tell him about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I walk around, wait, but soon I hear that geese say, when he sees somebody, he'd say that, and puts him, bang, he had 410. He shot one goose long ways too, and he took off, they were coming, bang, 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 and up three down, automatic jammed, full automatic. That shotgun is about, Ulma got that around 1916, long in there.
Wow.
And then we got down to cash it. And it's the shell didn't go in. And then by the time I got it in, then it too far. And we made a blind there. We were working on the blind, and pretty soon there were three geese flying up. We didn't know, I didn't see him. I heard him out there. And Alfred was coming down this way, and he got behind the stump, too low. He got right straight towards him. When I seen him, I said, them geese, they just turn towards me, and then they come right here, then I knock three of them down. And pretty soon, Alfred came out. He said, "Gee," he said, "I thought you were going to get some geese." He said, "They were coming straight to me, and now I got behind the stump," he said. "And when you call them, they just turn like this," he said. I asked, him, "You want to stay here or no?" He said, "I'm going down lower in the island." Then he was walking down, and there was one goose coming right straight towards him. I heard him, and I said, "Ah, that geese just turned towards me." And look at down, he stand there, look at us, he shake his head, and he walked in. Yeah.
It sounds like you enjoy calling geese.
Yeah, I used to call them right down to me.
Did many people used to be able to call geese like
no,
that?
No, very few.
I've heard about a guy further down the river from Holy Cross by the name of Golga.
Oh, yeah.
Who was little Golga, who was supposed to be very good at that, too.
Yeah. I see lots of guys, they call geese with them goose collar, but they just keep on going. Last time I went up Jimmy's camp, I think 65, I think. I seen somebody going up with dogs, and I told her I'm going to go up hunt geese. Then we got ready, so I went up. I had 7 dogs. Across Loudon, upper end of the island, I was going by, I hear 22, upper end of little island. I look back there and I see he got firebox, so I went back there and I made coffee. And I knocked a goose down, but the old automatic used to jam sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I shot and I knocked one down. And he asked me where I was going to stay. I said, up to, along the island. And I got across and I knocked another one down and it jammed again. I went a little ways and knocked another one down, it jammed again. And I have to clean it. And pretty soon I hear an airplane coming. I was thinking it might be game warden. And so I was thinking I'm going to leave my gun and geese there and keep going. If he lands, I'm going to tell him, I'm going to Ruby. Pretty soon I hear it land. Pretty soon I hear a couple of pump guns up there. It was a Harvey Wheeler and the Northern Consolidated agent. They were up Ruby with the mail and coming down. They got some geese. And so I started to walk up. I had my white pants, white parka on. Had snowshoes on. And I left my dogs down there. And pretty soon they took off. They were going by. You go and lactose in the airplane. And I left in the afternoon, and 6 o'clock in the morning I came home down here. I had 21 geese already. Yeah. And I walk on snowshoes, I hear geese, I call them, they just come right down to me. I just stand still and then bang, 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 bang. Yeah.
Do you remember what make or what model that old automatic was?
It's a Remington.
The Remington people would be, I'm sure, amazed to hear that their old automatic lasted that long.
Yeah, long time. I got a new one. Larry bought me a new one. One time I had shops back this way and come down the bank by down here, other end, going down the on the river. There was a little snow on the river quite a few years ago. I don't know how many years ago, and there was 5 geese come flying out from back that way, high. And I had an old automatic in the sleigh, and then going like this, I call them. They made one circle this way, and dogs are still going. I was sitting on top of the handlebars like this. I get my legs like this, and then I pull my shotgun out when they went around this way. And I took my shotgun and I shot 4 times and knocked 5 of them down. I never put shotgun up here.
It's from the hip, kind of.
just shoot it like this.
Yeah.
We shoot like that whole time.
That's really amazing.
In time of that spring, my brother got down. Me and Fred Stickman and Lincoln Tosh went back this way. We got 22 apiece, me and Lincoln, and Fred Stickman said he had an automatic. He said, I'm going to take shotgun so we can eat ducks. We told him, go ahead. Lots of ducks down there, pintail. He run around, he shoot, never got one. Well, me and Lincoln, we got one each going back, you know, long ways to shoot over, and then we got one duck each when we got back there, where there's a lake here, there's a slough here. And then we... The little dogs made fire. And Lincoln said, well, each guy eat his own ducks. And Fred Stickman, gee, he said, I didn't get nothing. And then he Lincoln said, no, we're all going to eat these two ducks, he said. And he left his shotgun here, we had fire here, and the slough is here, and the lake is right here. And they were sitting over there. And I was sitting this way, I was sitting on the ground, and I see ducks coming. I grabbed his shotgun, and that duck's going up like this, and I just, like this. And then they shot and knocked it in the slough. Mm-hmm. He said, how have you done that? I told him, just like this. He said, I've been shooting how many times now? He said, anyway, you can't knock one down yet.
How did you learn to do that?
We used to practice all the time. Old man used to order lots of shells, you know. What? We make our own shells too, and black powder too. Mm-hmm. Practice all the time.
What did you practice on? What did you use for targets when you practiced?
Oh, anything that's flying, we just shoot at it. Shoot all the time.
So that's how you learned this technique of just being able to flip it up, kind of.
Willowgrass, we used to hunt willowgrass. Willowgrass, they take off fast too. They're walking along. When they start to take off, you got no time to put it up here. You just like this and they knock them down. We used to. We get used to that, but I see lots of guys, they don't know how to shoot ducks or geese out of the air. They shoot, and they blame the gun and ammunition. I never blame the gun and ammunition.
Was that your favorite kind of hunting?
Yeah, we do too. Yeah. No more now. There used to be lots of them. Lots of willowgrass, everything. Rabbits, willowgrass, muskrat, everything. Now it's nothing. Lots of geese, white geese. I never seen white geese for how many years now. Used to be more white geese. Now it's they seem along the coast. They say they're along the coast at all.
I think they're doing a study on them down in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta area to find out what, you know, what's made them the white, populations.
Them white geese, they never used to come through here, lots of more than black, no more, they never come through here, they go along the coast, I guess.
We talked about the fact that there didn't used to be moose, and when the moose came in, and we talked about just now the geese. Are there other big changes in the wildlife that you can... that you've noticed in your lifetime around this area?
What's that?
Big changes in the animals.
Oh, yeah. There's quite a few moose around yet. There were no moose a long time ago, no.
What about other animals that have changed?
This year used to be lots of caribou back in here, too. Over here on that hill, across Galena, over there used to be lots of caribou. And they used to go from Nalada, they used to bunch go over there and... They kill lots of caribou. They just take the tongue and sinew at all. And John and Tusker used to tell them, do that, we know a caribou, but no, they didn't believe it. They just kill lots of for nothing. Just take the tongue out and sinew at all. And pretty soon he said, pretty soon he said, no more caribou over there.
That can be a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
What about animals that get trapped? Have the populations of trapped, fur animals changed much?
Well, sometimes there's a little more, sometimes not very much.
Okay, well, we better turn the tape.